main topics we'll talk about are Green's functions and special functions, a generalization of the notion of function known as distributions, and then asymptotic series. So we'll talk about a few other things, but most of the class will be talking about that. So lecture notes have been posted on the wiki. I'll try to have those up at least 15 minutes before lecture starts, so if you want to print them out and follow along, you can. I don't guarantee they'll be up much before that. So this course, we will be jumping around a bit. This course is the remnants of three or four different courses, the most useful parts. So the topics have been chosen not for continuity, but really for being, because the topics have been chosen because they'll be useful, hopefully, later in the year. So in a bit more detail, what are we going to talk about? So today, we'll actually not directly be talking about functions, et cetera, but we'll talk about path integrals, some non-relativistic quantum mechanics. So this is the other loose thread that will be going through the course. So most of the other topics we'll talk about will have some connection to path integrals. Then we'll spend a bit more than a lecture talking about distributions, which are the generalization, the notion of function. The most familiar example is the Dirac delta. And we'll see why it can be problematic to think about the Dirac delta as a function. Then we'll finish up the third lecture by discussing the gamma and zeta functions. And in particular, the gamma on the complex plane, which will be useful in QFT later. Then lectures 4 and part of lecture 5 will discuss Green's functions. And then some properties of a broad class of special functions known as orthogonal functions. And finally, we'll spend approximately the last two lectures discussing asymptotic series. So that's where we're going. It will feel like we're jumping around because we are. Okay. So today I wanted to discuss the path integral. So as you know, the path integral is another formulation of quantum mechanics that's entirely equivalent to the Heisenberg or Schrodinger picture. It's less often taught as in undergraduate quantum mechanics courses, mainly because it's calculations in non-relativistic quantum mechanics using the path integral tend to be more complicated, more tedious. That reason it's not taught, but it's still important because it's another conceptual way to think about quantum mechanics. But the main reason we're going to discuss the path integral is that, unlike in non-relativistic quantum mechanics, in QFT, many calculations are much easier, significantly easier, using the path integral. So in particular, quantization of non-abelian gauge theories that we'll discuss in QFT2 and instantons in QFT3 will be significantly easier to discuss and perform calculations using the path integral compared to other formulations of QFT. Okay, so in today's lecture, I'll just focus on a particularly simple case, a particle in one dimension with a Hamiltonian, just has a simple kinetic term, p squared over 2m. And an arbitrary potential that depends on the position q. And so one very simple object we could study in QFT, or in quantum mechanics, is the amplitude for a particle to propagate from some position q at t equals 0 to q prime at t equals t. Now this is also often referred to as a propagator and denoted as q. This is the amplitude for the particle to propagate from q to q prime. And so this this factor here is just the wave function at time t. And so you've noticed I've set h bar to 1. And I'll use units where h bar is 1 throughout the lecture. You can always restore the h bar just by dimensional analysis. Okay. So how can we turn this expression into a path integral expression? Our basic strategy is just going to be to repeatedly insert the identity inside the expression for the propagator we have up there. And to do that, we need to break up the time evolution operator. So we have e to the minus iht, which we can break up into two factors, just time evolution for some time t minus t1 after some time evolution for time t1. And if we use this identity in our expression for the propagator, we can insert the identity here in the position basis. So the identity is just an integral over all intermediate positions q1 times q1, q1. And if we do that, that gives us I'll move the integral up front. And we see then that the propagator for the entire time interval is just the integral of the propagator from q1 at t1 to q prime at t. T times the propagator from Q and 0 to Q1 and T1. So this is saying basically just that the particle must be somewhere at the intermediate time T1, and it could be anywhere. And if we want to get the amplitude for it to propagate from Q1 to Q, we just multiply the amplitudes to propagate from Q1 to from Q to Q1, then Q1 to Q prime, and any rate over all possible Q1s. All right. So we can repeat this procedure just by breaking up the time evolution to many more small steps and insert the identity repeatedly. And that will get us most of the way there towards a path integral expression for the propagator. So let's repeat using n time intervals. And let's denote t over n by delta t. So if we do that, the propagator just becomes q prime e to the minus ih delta t, e to the minus ih delta t q. We have n factors here. And then we can just insert the identity in here n minus 1 times. So we do that. We get is this expression. Which I'd like to introduce some shorthand notation for this. This is getting a bit lengthy. So we have here n minus 1 position integrals. And then we have also n propagators. So we have the propagator here from qn minus 1 to q, all the way down to q to q1. And so I'm just going to denote the propagator from qj to qj plus 1 as k sub qj plus 1, k sub qj. So this is just qj plus 1 e to the minus ih delta t qj. And I've also introduced the notation that q is q naught and q prime is qn. So the endpoints just simplifies the notation to introduce the notation that calls q, q naught, and qn. But note that we're not integrating over them. They're fixed. So what have we done? So what we've done is we have written the propagator as a sum over all n-legged paths. So schematically, we've written it as sum over pass, the amplitude for a particular path, where sum over the pass is really an integral. And the amplitude for a particular path is just the product of the propagators. Along that path. And so we can sketch a picture of what this looks like. So we have a particle that starts out at position q naught. Then at their time delta t, we basically put a screen with infinitely many holes in it. So it can go through any one of those holes. Some position q1. And then another screen at 2 delta t. And so on. And then at the final time, it ends up at a definite position, qn. So this was qn. The story was that when Feynman was coming up with the idea of the path integral, he just asked the question, what happens if we punch more, if we start with a double slit experiment and punch more and more holes in it and then put more and more screens? So eventually there's no screens at all. And we're just summing over all possible paths that a particle can take from q naught to qn. All right. So all that's left to do is take the limit n goes to infinity. And in the limit, n goes to infinity, delta t goes to 0. So we can just treat this as a small parameter. And in this limit, we can simplify our expressions for the propagator in one of the small time intervals. So in this limit, kq j plus 1 qj times a qj plus 1. We can expand the exponential. We get 1 minus I h delta t plus 1/2 h delta t squared, and so on, qj. And so this gives us a few terms. First, we get qj plus 1, qj. And our second term is minus I delta t, qj plus 1, h, qj. And we'll only work to this order. So this first term is just a delta function. could also write like this. And here we've run across our first distribution, so we'll discuss later in the course in much more detail the properties of delta and other distributions like it. So here there's nothing unfamiliar we need to deal with, but we'll see some examples later. Unfamiliar situations where we have to manipulate distributions. So that's our first term. And our second term we can simplify as well. Our second term is our assumed form of the Hamiltonian. Just have this. And then I'm going to insert the identity to the right of the Hamiltonian here, this time in terms of the momentum basis. And so now we have, here we can think of V of Q as acting on Qj from the right. And so this then becomes minus I delta T Qj plus 1. We have V of Q J plus 1. And P squared can act on the position momentum eigenstate from the left. So we can just replace P hat with PJ. And so here we get PJ squared over 2m. And I still have the integral. And so we can then rewrite this using QP is e to the I PQ. So we've got two factors like that here. This one that's in the opposite order. So we get a minus sign, and then this first one. So we get, we still have this integral. Still have this factor pj squared over 2m. And then from Qj plus 1, we get a pj. We get e to the I pj qj plus 1. And then from pj a qj, we get a minus qj. And so here's our expression. Now, this may look a little bit weird because it's asymmetric between Qj and Qj plus 1. So here we have a Qj plus 1. Expect our expression should be symmetric. And this can be traced back to the fact that we decided to insert this identity to the right of the Hamiltonian. If we had inserted it to the left, Instead, we would have got a V of QJ. So it ultimately doesn't matter, but it'll be just for symmetry. So this is asymmetric. So if we put 1 to the left of H, we would get V of QJ instead. And so let's just average. And define Q bar J as half QJ plus 1 plus QJ. And then we get D of QJ bar. Okay. Yes.
So the only reason they're not the same
is because they're truncated. Yes. Well, our expression up here. So we made a choice here to insert this identity to the right. We could have inserted it to the left. So at this order, this expression, this is equal to the same thing if we replace QJ plus 1 with QJ. Yeah, and if we sum the entire series, it shouldn't matter what we do.
But once you insert it, that operator p squared divided by 2m plus v of q becomes a number.
That's right. Yeah.
So then you can just swap them. Is it really a difference?
Well, it becomes, so if we had inserted the identity over here.
The v of q would be v of q j plus 1 instead of v of q j.
So here, the v of q is acting on the v. QJ plus 1, so we got to be J plus 1 because we inserted the identity to the right. We inserted the identity over here. We would have an expression like the same thing, but the Hamiltonian to the right, so we'd have the QJ plus 1.
The expressions are not the same, but they differ by less than O of delta T squared, so it doesn't matter.
That's right. And QJ. So if we did it in the other order, so this has, we can't commute.
QJ and QJ plus 1 can be very close together, but that doesn't mean that V of QJ and V of QJ plus 1 are close together, and that's what causes the difference.
Yeah, no, it
doesn't.
The J's, you're using J's everywhere.
Yes.
Maybe it would be better
if
P or PIs and
QJs,
because they're not the same.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, so far we're not summing them. When I do sum them, I'll be careful to distinguish.
So when you introduce that identity, are those little dummy J's like when you're integrating over DPJ?
So DPJ here is just a dummy.
So that's
variable.
Not the same as the QJ.
No, once we plug this back, so here we're just looking at one small time interval. Once we plug this back into our expression where we have n of these intervals, then there's going to be a correspondence between the number of momentum integrals we have and the number of intermediate positions we're integrating over.
Okay.
That's why I put a subscript on there, but it's so far it's not important.
But it's not the same subscript as that of the Q.
No.
Okay. And then, so in the PJ, in the Hamiltonian, the PJ squared over 2m.
Yes.
That corresponds to when you're integrating over that J, not the Q.
Yes. Yes. If you like, use a different letter. Call this I. Okay. So now we can plug back in. And so what we get is that K QJ plus 1 QJ is integral dpi over 2 pi e to the I pi qj plus 1 minus qj 1 minus I delta t pi squared over 2m plus v of q bar j plus higher order terms. And we could compute these in almost the same way. So I'm not going to go through that. But what you would find if you did compute these higher order terms is that we just have these. We can resum the series. And what we'll get is just the exponential of e to the minus iht. So this will resum to the Hamiltonian, this time just as a number evaluated at P and Q bar. Q bar J and PI. Okay, so the argument works very similar for the higher order terms. Okay. So now we can, we're almost there. We can plug this expression back into our expression for the propagator for the entire interval, which is just integral dq1 up to dqn minus 1. Is the integral product from k equals 1 to n minus 1 dqk integral j equals 0 to n minus 1. So we have one more momentum integral than position integral dpj over 2 pi times the exponential I delta t sum L equals 0 to n minus 1 EL QL plus 1 minus QL over delta t minus h of pl and q bar l. And this sum just runs over this part. Okay, so let's look at what we got. So we're integrating over both position and momentum, so over all the phase space. We have a term here that looks very much like pq dot. So as we take the limit, delta t goes to 0, this just becomes q dot. And then here's the Hamiltonian. So this, this expression looks very much like the Lagrangian. We would get, remember our Hamiltonian, let's just, they would give us the Hamiltonian we started with, which was p squared over 2m plus v. And so so this is the discrete version of the path integral, and it, as we take the limit n goes to infinity, this becomes the phase space path integral. And really what we mean when we write down the phase-based path integral is just the continuum limit of this, the limit n goes to infinity of this. But we can introduce some new notation that makes this expression look a lot cleaner. So in the limit n goes to infinity, this delta t times this sum becomes an integral dt. And this just becomes this is just pq dot minus h. And so this here this is the what's known as the phase space path integral. And so here this just means integrate over all functions p of t. So if we're specifying the momentum at points that are infinitesimally close together, we're basically specifying an entire function, p of t. Similarly, if we're specifying all of the positions at points infinitesimally close together, we're basically specifying an entire function of t, q of t. And so notice we're using the same, we're not including this factor 2 pi. So traditionally, you just hide the measure in this notation. It makes it look a lot cleaner. And in most practical purposes, we don't really actually care about the overall normalization. So we'll see why in q of t class. But so this is our first main result. Note that we do need to so in this expression, q of 0 is fixed to be q, and q of t is fixed to be q prime.
So the argument from the exponential is like the action.
It is, and we'll do a little bit more work, and we'll see how this actually becomes the action.
Sorry, this might be a silly question, but when did you change from multiplying pi by qj plus 1 minus qj to multiplying two things with the same emphasis?
So we have, so To answer that question, let's just count how many integrals over QJ we have and how many integrals over PJ we have.
Oh, well, they all cross-latch.
So here, we're integrating over only Q1 up to Qn minus 1. Q0 and Qn are fixed. But we have one extra P integral, basically. So so Qs are determining the endpoints, and the Ps are basically, there's one P for each interval, and there's n intervals here. So there's one extra P interval compared to Q integral. So that's why there's a mismatch here.
OK, but then in the exponential?
Oh, so
will all the other terms cancel out that aren't, like, say, P1 by Q?
So here I'm free to give this any label I'd like. So here this P is just a dummy.
Mm-hmm.
PI is just some dummy integration variable. So I could call it PI, or I could call it PI plus 1 or PI minus 1. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What matters is the fact that there is one more P integral than
Yeah,
Q
no,
integral.
That's fine. But so that the subscript L, does that correspond to which interval it is?
Oh.
It's more the subscript I'm asking
okay.
about, because before, sorry, that's what I was asking about before as well. Maybe
I see. So.
So before we have PI by QJ plus 1 minus QJ, and the I's and the J's aren't the same, but there we have PL by QL minus 1. So they're the same subscript.
I see.
Like, does that correspond to which interval you're on, or?
Yeah,
or
so. If we do expand this sum out first, we should have PLs going from one, we should have PLs going from 0 to n minus 1, and then we can integrate over them. And so I've probably done some relabeling in doing this, but if we expand this out, you should see that it reduces just to the product we had before.
OK, thank you.
So one comment about this expression. So this. This is the path integral, but to actually compute anything, we almost always need to go back to the discrete expression. And to evaluate integrals like this, most of the time, we can only do it if they're Gaussian integrals. If it's not a Gaussian integral, usually we have to manipulate it so that we can approximate the integral we're interested in with a sum of Gaussian integrals. And we'll, in the asymptotic series part of this course, we'll see in some detail how to do that. But for now, I'd just like to say very few words about Gaussian integrals. That's how we'll be able to proceed further. So this is our main tool for evaluating path integrals. Or functional integrals, which is the QFT generalization. And also brings it closer to the title of our course. And so a Gaussian integral, I'm sure you all know the most familiar example, so integral e to the minus ax squared is just square root of pi over a. So we can do this by just squaring this side and going to polar coordinates. I won't go through that, but I'm sure I'll see that. If not, ask me later. But this is one of the few integrals we know how to do. So it's important basically because free theories or harmonic oscillators will have quadratic terms in the exponent. So Hamiltonian has a p squared term, so we can do an integral, a Gaussian integral, to do the p integrals here. And we'll do that in a minute. Integrals of this type, where we just have an arbitrary function up here, are generally extremely difficult to do, and almost never can we do them exactly. To actually use a path integral, we need to do Gaussian integrals, and many of the variations will be important. I'm sure you've seen some of them. We'll go over additional variations of the Gaussian integral in tutorial tomorrow, some perhaps less familiar variations. But for now, we're just going to need one very minor variation of this. And that's what happens if we add a linear term. And so if we get a linear term, if we have a linear term in the exponent, we can just complete the square and then change variables to reduce it to this case. Probably familiar to most of you. On all of you. So this is our missing an exponent here. So this is all we'll need to do the momentum integrals. So these Gaussian integrals will be important throughout QFT courses. Okay, so if, as we've been assuming all along, our Hamiltonian is p squared over 2m plus v of q, we can do the momentum integrals. And before we do that, let's just slightly rewrite the expression we had before, collecting all of the momentum-dependent parts. So we've got front the position integrals and the potential part. The exponent doesn't depend on momentum, so we'll just hold that out front and ignore it. And the part we're interested in for now is this momentum part. And so let's take a look at this for a second. So basically, this just looks like n uncoupled copies of the integral I wrote on the board up there.
Sorry, Dan, why are we equating? Like,
there's nothing.
There shouldn't be an equal sign.
Okay.
Thank you. Times. This just looks like n uncoupled copies of the integral up there. So we can do that directly. I may be worrying about the I here. Does this formula actually work with an I? Which is a good question. If you were thinking that. It does, in fact, work. And if you don't believe me, you'll show it on during tutorial tomorrow. And so we can, the result is unchanged if we've got an I. So each of these integrals just gives us this factor. And so we can plug this back in to our expression from before. Zero and minus one root m over two pi I delta t e to the I delta t m q dot I squared over two. Which gives us just some normalization. And so this expression here is the discrete, once we take the limit n goes to infinity, this becomes the position space path integral. Dot here. And so this is the position space path integral. And you notice that the exponent, once we take the limit n goes to infinity or delta t goes to 0, just becomes the integral of the Lagrangian, or the action. So when the delta t goes to 0, this becomes the integral e to the I times the action. And this is the form of the path integral that we'll be using most often in QFT. well, the immediate generalization of this. So again, I've hidden a normalization in the definition of the measure for the path integral, but same. So that's just basically for convenience, and we usually don't care. The same argument as before holds for why this. We take the continuum limit of this, we get this. So we're just specifying the position at points that are infinitesimally close together. All right. So that is basically what I wanted to say about the path integral. Are there any questions about that? We'll go through some examples about how to compute that in tutorial tomorrow. But for a wrap up, I just wanted to say a few words about what's next. So, first, distributions. So we ran across delta earlier today. Delta is not a function. And thinking about it as one can lead to confusion and wrong results. So we'll see properly how to define delta. And in QFT, very few of the objects we'll actually work with are real functions. They're almost all distributions. So some fraction of the infinities we'll encounter are just because we're dealing with distributions, not functions. So we'll clarify that.
So what you're saying is that there's a kind of a not too difficult trick to work with deltas properly, right?
We'll
with them as distributions.
As distributions.
Sort of functions.
Yeah. So we'll set up the formalism.
Is there a similar trick which is not too incredibly involved to work with position and momentum eigenstates in free space? Because like they don't fit in your Hilbert space. I mean, the gets Q and V that you were working with are
right.
Insane, not in your Hilbert space.
Right.
Do you have to go to like functional analysis and von Neumann stuff, or?
We'll talk about related issues. Basically, distributions is a dual space of a function space. And so, if you and that many of the functions you're used to can be thought of as distributions, but not the converse. So, function spaces the distribution spaces we'll be talking about, I think, are not general enough to include those eigenstates, but
the Hilbert space is its own dual.
Yeah.
So if it's not in the Hilbert space, it's also not really going to be
right. So I don't think this will help directly.
So you have to get involved to do that properly.
Yeah. Yes. But so that's going to be our first topic, and get started a little bit on that. Then also talk about it is at least tangentially connected to path integrals. Then we'll spend a bit of time talking about Green's functions. And so the propagator that we've been discussing all lecture is closely related to a Green's function. So we can use the propagator to construct so if we're interested in computing a wave function at some time t, and write this as q times psi of t, which is q times time evolution operator psi t naught. So here this is a time evolution operator. Which, again, inserting the identity, can write as the integral dq naught q u of t t naught q naught q naught. Which is so here this expression is just the propagator we've constructed. So propagator is basically a Green's function. We can use it to construct a solution to the Schrodinger equation. Given some initial data. And we'll learn a bit more about what Green's functions are and how to construct them later in the week. And then the final part of the course talk about asymptotic series. Most path integrals cannot be evaluated exactly. And so we have to do perturbation theory. Generally does not lead to a convergent series. It's generally not true, at least in the strict mathematical sense, that if you take take more and more terms, compute more and more terms using a perturbative approximation to a path integral, that you'll get a convergent series that you'll get a better approximation to what you're trying to approximate. Nevertheless, perturbation theory is a useful thing to do, but it does lead to a different kind of infinity that. So asymptotic series generally diverge. And so we'll see in what sense these are actually good approximations to what we're trying to approximate, and try to learn how to deal with a different type of infinity that we'll encounter in QFT. So that's where we're going. Since I've got a few minutes, we can get started on distributions. So why study distributions? So we're all familiar with many physical examples of where distributions are relevant. Simple one is a point charge. So where the charge distribution is 0, x, not 0, and infinity, x is 0, such that so there's no function that satisfies these two things. This is not defined a function to the real numbers. In the ordinary rules of calculus, these two things are inconsistent. So as you know, this is proportional to the delta function. So this is one familiar example. There are others that will come up more in Q of T. So I won't give you a precise example, but just to illustrate the flavor, how to make sense of things like this. The nth derivative of the absolute value of x at x equals 0. Or the integral along the real line of 1 over x dx. Neither of these make much sense using the rules of calculus you've learned, but nevertheless, they can be uniquely defined and computed in a straightforward manner using the language of and techniques of distributions. Finally, there's two more applications that. Well, so if we often want to take limits in physics. So in particular, if we want to take a limit of a sequence of functions, the result is not always a function. And so some care is needed to think about what you get if you're trying to take the limit of a sequence of functions. Finally, variational problems. So in David's course, I think he talked a little bit about functional derivatives. They're stated much more easily in the language of distributions, and we can perhaps make slightly more rigorous some of the things that he told you about. And there's a well defined and easy to use procedure that we'll learn about to compute functional derivatives. But in general, many variational problems that we run across in physics don't have solutions that are functions, but they do have solutions in terms of distributions. So alluded to several times, the most important example of a distribution. Is delta. And you've probably seen this defined in one of several similar ways. Put quotes here. This doesn't quite may not make sense. So as a limit, as a sequence of functions, where say f sigma could be 1 over sigma, or x less than sigma over 2, and 0 x greater than sigma over 2. This is just a top path that gets progressively narrower that integrates to 1. Satisfies integral f sigma dx equals 1 for all sigma greater than 0, and f of x is 0 for x not equal to 0. So this is not a function. It's not defined at f equals 0. And thinking about it as a function, I won't have time to see where you can go wrong if you think about this as a function, but I will show that to you tomorrow. Can lead you to errors. So I'll just, we'll continue tomorrow, but I think this is a good place to stop. Any questions?
At the bottom, does that say f of x is 0 for x
minus 2? Yes, that's x.
Does that mean sigma of x?
F sigma. No, f, just f, the limit.
And what?
F is the limit.
What did you say?